once again, we're coming to you from Pestava Golf and Yacht Club. The place is really just magnificent, and it's a beautiful time. The sun is just setting right now, although that will take place for quite some time. There's something about living in a place like Moscow, I guess because we're so far up north. I know many of you live in places like this, so you understand it. But for me, being from Miami, it's kind of weird. The fact that sometimes you could be playing golf at 9:30, 10 o'clock, and in the middle of summer, you can even go into like 11 o'clock, which is really a wonderful thing if you like to do outdoor stuff, because the day lasts a very long time in Moscow. So yeah, here we are. It's called Pestava. It's one of many, by the way, golf and country clubs that exist in this area. It's quite impressive. I mean, if you think of it from the standpoint of where most Westerners come from, they would think of Russia as a dark and dreary place where things like this generally don't exist. Russia's changed very much since it used to be the Soviet Union. And these are the kinds of things that are eye-opening for Americans when they come here, because it stands in stark contrast to what they're told by the media in the United States. And speaking of the media in the United States, all last week and now throughout the beginning of this week, what we have done here on the Sanchez Effect is to try and focus on Western perspectives. We had a long sit down with Candace Owens and with George Galloway, Tucker Carlson coming soon, I guarantee it. And we talked to Andrew Tate in our last episode. And now we're going to talk to Tristan Tate, also a person who is an influencer and his following is vast. Again, 10 to 20 million people regularly tuning in just to see what he's going to say to them on any given day. And we're happy to welcome Tristan. He joins us here on the set on this day. Tristan, so good to see you.
Happy to be here, Mr.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, let's talk a little journalism. Your experience has been, I imagine, as difficult as your brother explained to me when I had a conversation with him. The idea that one day you're one of the most followed, one of the most popular superstar, really, as influencers go, and suddenly you're in handcuffs, being taken away to jail. That must have been the freakiest damn thing. I couldn't even begin to imagine what that would be like.
Yeah, it was a very interesting experience. I think the mind-blowing thing about it for me, from somebody from the United States and Europe, I primarily grew up in the United Kingdom, is that this idea of innocent until proven guilty is the foundation of society. I think that in a country like Romania, which has an absolutely appalling reputation for criminal justice, the fact that they can accuse you of something, anything they like, and lock you in jail while they investigate, and I say investigate like this on purpose, is quite a scary idea that you can be found in that situation. And I assumed it was going to be over within 12 to 24 hours, but I was in jail for many, many months before I was then sentenced to house arrest. And I was locked within the confines of my house for many years.
Wait, take me through those months when you were in the jail. What was that like?
Well, it was a time to reflect. It was a time to read and to pray and to try to understand what was going on. It was a very confusing time. For the first few days I was in jail, I didn't even know the specifics of what I'd been accused of doing. To this day, I still don't understand the exact,
did you have a hearing? Did somebody present the, you are accused of blah, 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 blah. Apparently they said that you were with young women.
So I have never actually had the opportunity in the Romanian justice system to present evidence in my defense. One of the most mind-blowing things about my case is, I'm not going to say her name because I'm not allowed to, but she's a great friend of mine. What they tried to do is they tried to find any woman in the world who had any financial link to me, who I'd ever sent money to or taken on vacation. And they said, this is potentially a victim of a crime. Let's keep the Tates in jail while we investigate. To just outlay how stupid my case was and what the Romanians really did, one of the most famous examples, and this is well known, you can find it in the case files, is a girl whose cancer treatment I had paid for. She's a friend of mine. She had been for many years at the time. She's still my friend to this very day. The fact that I had financial transfers going into her bank account that were not explained, they said, this girl is a potential victim. Keep Tristan in prison until she tells us that he's done something wrong. And she, vehemently defends me to this very day.
Do you feel like, I don't know enough about it, but it seems like they took what is your lifestyle and your brother's lifestyle, which is rather flamboyant compared to some old guy like me.
It can be.
But that's your prerogative. You get to choose your lifestyle. The world doesn't get to choose your lifestyle for you. And unless you did something illegal, like having sex with a minor or something like that, then what they're essentially saying is they wanted to castigate you for that lifestyle. That's what it seems like they were doing, right? That's the argument I hear you make.
I don't think it was a punishment for the lifestyle itself. I think they used the lifestyle as a plausible story of perhaps he committed crimes during, you know, his years when he was having parties and, let's say, you know, womanizing. You could use that word maybe to describe me. It's
I think you could use that word to describe every human being.
Fair.
Yeah.
But I don't think they were punishing...
We're all imperfect, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. They weren't punishing me for anything I ever did. They were punishing me for, I think, my opinions and what I said and what I was doing completely unrelated to that. To give you the official story is Tristan Tate never committed a crime in his life, stayed away from crime, stayed away from drugs his entire life. He was 33, 34 years of age. I actually owned a company at the time that was valued at just over $2 billion. I was a very wealthy man. I had kids at that time. And at that point in my life, I thought, let's start doing crime. And I started doing crimes. And that's what they investigated me for. As I said, I've had no criminal convictions. I haven't had the chance to ever present evidence in my defense. And, you know, this label is attached to my name, despite the fact that I have a cleaner criminal record than most people who I know.
So it must piss you off. If they're making stuff up about you, I would be furious.
You know, I don't feel anger to be a useful outlet to channel my emotion into. I try to stay calm about it. I try to stay calculated about it. I try to take opportunities to make sure that the people who matter know I've done nothing wrong.
Yeah.
I'm very good friends with many of the people who they listed as victims of mine, against their will, by the way, to this day. So when I meet important people, I make sure I'm with my various friends, and I play this game where I say, hey, if you're one of the victims in this case, raise your hand. And a bunch of my friends raise their hand, and they're like, yeah, it's stupid. And when they see it from that angle, people, you know, very quickly change their minds. What the people who consume the European mainstream media think genuinely doesn't concern me very much. So it doesn't piss me off, and I don't get angry.
European mainstream media.
Yes.
Boy, that's something recently. You know, they're arresting people in the UK because of what they have on their phones or what they've retweeted.
12,000 new cases last year.
Isn't that crazy?
Absolutely.
You're in a country right now, Russia, which is freer than the UK. You know who said that? You know who? I was not long ago in Sochi. Which is, as you know, a beautiful...
Yes, ski resort.
Yeah, fantastic place. Yeah, they had the Olympics there.
Yes.
And Mr. Putin came, and he had a meeting with myself and a couple of other, several other journalists. And he kidded about this, but when I thought about it, it's not really a joke. It's true. He said, you know, I was in the KGB. We were like, yeah, we remember. I know you were in the KGB. And he goes, we were bad, but we weren't as bad as that. We at least gave people an opportunity. He says, we wouldn't just show up and say, there's something we heard you said, come with us, you're going to jail. We would at least talk to them before we took them for jail. He says that he's, and I think there's some truth to this. I talked to my friend George Galloway yesterday. In the UK, they literally are scouring people's phones to see what they have said or not said, and then basically arresting them for it.
Well, it's not just the UK. It's actually the European continent as a whole and most countries within the now European Union. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. My brother was just charged 6 days ago because they've obviously found no evidence to back up their original story. The case has been thrown out of court since 2024, by the way. They've charged Andrew.
The original case is gone.
The original case, not gone. Maybe they'll try again.
Yeah, it's never gone.
But they threw it out of court. The judge said no, can't even take it to trial.
Okay.
But Andrew was charged with essentially free speech violations in Romania, which is very funny. And it's cute that the Romanians are now trying this because Andrew is an American citizen. And the free speech laws in Romania actually only were enacted into law 60 days ago. And they found things Andrew said on the internet 6 or 7 years old and said, this violates Romanian law, even though he's an American speaking on American platforms, on an American podcast, a lot of the time not even within the confines of Romanian state. And they're trying to charge him with free speech violations, to which I say, good luck. My constitution guarantees me freedom of speech, and you can all get lost.
One of the reasons I came to Russia was because Joe Biden violated my free speech.
Yeah.
I'm a journalist. Mm. As you know, I've been a journalist all my life. I've worked at CNN. I've won Peabody Awards. I've won every award you can imagine in journalism. And yet Joe Biden decided, well, if you have any relationship at all or are telling Russia's side of the story, then you can't do journalism in America.
Fair. I mean,
that's crazy. When you know, when Vladimir Putin has news conferences here, you know who's in the audience? CNN.
Of course they are.
And the BBC.
Of course they are.
And they ask him horrible, difficult questions, and he answers them.
Absolutely.
No Russian media, no Chinese media, nobody else, no Iranian media is allowed to question the President of the United States. But yet, we're supposed to be the freedom of speech country and the democracy. Sounds like bullshit, doesn't it?
Well, you know, the thing that I like about the United States, and as I said, I'm not here for any other reason besides the fact that I'm a tourist. I'll let you know, when I visited Uzbekistan, when I visited the Bahamas, when I visited Turkey, all these countries I visited in the last few months, everyone's like, okay, Tristan's on vacation. When I come to Russia, there are certain people online saying, ah, he's a paid propagandist.
Course,
I'm like, well, no, I'm not. I don't take any money from anyone to go anywhere. In fact, I paid a lot of money to come here because, you know, I like to stay in nice hotels. I just decided to come and see Russia for myself. But the thing I like about America is at the very least, the freedom of speech is guaranteed by our Constitution. So hopefully if the rule of law, you know, prevails, you should be able to beat these kind of allegations. But freedom of speech is very tricky.
Eventually, though. But when you get beat up and they name you or they label you or they do something of the sort, eventually you're going to win. So, you know, you might beat the rap, but you won't beat the ride. And the ride is painful, and you will lose your job, you will lose your friends. Everywhere you go, people will look at you and say, oh, anti-Semite, oh, racist, oh, homophobe, oh.
Mm-hmm. Human trafficker.
Whatever they call you guys. Right, exactly.
Yeah. Misogynist.
So, yeah, you could beat it, but that stuff's painful for people.
Yes. I mean, everything I suffered, to be perfectly clear, comes from Europe. Everything I suffer comes primarily from Romania, and I think there's a lot of involvement from the UK as well, because I am a British citizen also. Mm. So I haven't actually suffered any of this coming from the American government, any American government, to be perfectly frank with you. But,
under this administration.
If
there's a Democrat in the White House in a couple of years, that could change.
Who knows? Who knows?
Right.
It could.
Bring politics into this.
No, but I mean, I like speaking about politics, but very much like they controlled the printing press back in the day, they could say in the United States or even in the UK or anywhere else in the world, oh, you do have the freedom of speech. You can say what you want. But if you can't say it online and you can't have bank accounts and you can't have a job because of it, do you really have freedom of speech? If you then can't feed your kids, do you really have freedom of speech if no one's allowed to listen to you? Mm-hmm. Do you really have freedom of speech if other people can get arrested for downloading or retweeting your opinions? Do you really have freedom of speech at all? Mm-hmm. So freedom of speech is a very tricky thing to police, which is why I like the US Constitution's kind of hard line on it. I've been called a free speech absolutist. I'm not.
Congress shall pass no law. First Amendment. Yes.
What I am is I'm a constitutional absolutist. So the right to bear firearms, freedom of speech. I even go so far as to say that people shouldn't even need driving licenses. I'm one of those crazy people who loves the U.S. Constitution. I mean, that's what my grandfather fought against the Japanese for in the Pacific conflict, you know, to protect the Constitution. And Europe is where my problems come from. And Europe, I think, is really the hotbed of a lot of the problems we see in the world today. I think that the European Union is extremely toxic, more so than any other administration.
Let me jump on something you just said, and which was accurate. When we fought the Japanese, it was an honorable action, and we did it because it needed to be done, and in many ways, it was the virtuous constitution of the United States that we were defending. But now we fight in really stupid places for stupid reasons, and it has nothing to do with any of those things. And it has nothing to do with the Constitution. It has everything to do with money and people who are war profiteers, and in many ways, Israel. And I could go down the list, and I could begin with Vietnam, and then I can take you through Iraq, and then I could take you through Afghanistan, and then I could take you through Libya, and I could take you through Yemen, and I could take you through Syria. In all of those cases, there was really no reason to go to war with any of those countries.
Yeah, well, you mentioned George Galloway earlier. Now, George Galloway, I've met a few times. I guess I would call him a friend. I do know him. But I've always been an admirer of George Galloway because I was very much of the military recruitment age in the United Kingdom when Tony Blair decided to join the United States and go and invade Iraq and Afghanistan. And I found
what a horrible human being.
I found a lot of Tony Blair.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, he's a horrible human being.
I don't have very
much. He just
made
millions and millions of dollars off of other people's suffering.
I don't have very much nice to say about any British politician in this day and age. No,
but not. So you don't like Starmer?
Not at all.
Such a lovely guy.
Absolutely not. I mean, what's there to like? But yeah, I really started to admire George Galloway back then, and I told him that when I met him face to face for the first time a couple of years ago. And it sucks a lot for my generation, because I come from the working class town of poor people and the working class town of poor young men in the United Kingdom. Luton is one of them, my hometown. Lots of people sign up to the military. So I have friends who have served many tours in Afghanistan, many tours in Iraq, and they're all now my age, approaching 40-year-old men. You know, a lot of them have luckily moved on with their lives. They're doing other things, very profitable things, very meaningful things.
Yeah.
But they look me square in the eyes and they're like, Tristan, I don't know why the hell I was there to this very day. I don't know why I was there. I don't know what I was doing there. I don't know what we achieved there.
No.
I think we made everything worse.
Yeah, of course we did.
And these serving soldiers say that to my face. I don't feel like...
So do mine, by the way. I've got a lot of buddies who were in Iraq, and they say, Rick, you have no idea. I mean, we went there to take their oil.
Yeah. If my
and it took 5 minutes for us to realize that once we got off the ship.
Of course. If my grandfather were alive today, I don't think he would truthfully look at any of us in the eye and say, yeah, I went to Japan to, I went to the South, the Pacific to fight the Japanese, and oh, no, it wasn't worth it. That was stupid. Yeah. I think he'd say we did a very noble thing.
Right.
So I think the abolishment of the draft, the all-volunteer army, gave a lot of big companies the ability to, you know, push for wars against who they like without so much pushback from the public. I mean, I think nowadays people feel like, well, he's a soldier, he signed up to be a soldier. So what if there's a war in Mozambique? So what if you need to go to Somalia? So what if you need to overthrow Libya? These are soldiers, that's their job.
Yeah.
I feel like when they just used to draw random men in, you know, especially from the...
Well, what about give me a reason why you're doing it? What about that? I'm a citizen of this country. Do I get a vote? Do I get to say... No, I don't think we should invade Iran and bomb them because, frankly, I don't think they're a threat to the United States of America. Why are you going there? And why am I now paying $7 to $8 a gallon for gas? Because you made this decision without checking with me.
Well, taxpayers are the ones who fund the war at the end of the day. And poor people are the ones who bleed for the wars at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And these are the people who are consulted the absolute least when these decisions are made. And frankly, that really upsets me because although I'm blessed and privileged enough to... You know, no one's ever going to conscript me to do anything and I can just go somewhere else. I come from the generation of people that are used as cannon fodder. I come from that environment. And it really
upsets me. And then it ruins
me.
Their communities as well, does it not?
Absolutely,
I mean, and especially in England. You know better.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, sure. Hey, we'll invade Libya. Oh, we'll invade Iraq. Oh, we'll invade Syria.
Where do they go?
Where do those people, after we've destroyed their frickin' country, end up? In London. And then the people of London says, what are these people doing here? Your government... Put them there, right? Am I wrong?
No, I completely agree with you. But also the scary thing about undocumented people coming from zones that were declared as our enemies. So I'm a British soldier. I'm fighting Afghanistan. The Afghans are our enemy. If a man throws away his passport and moves over to England, you don't know if he was the local, you know, date merchant, the local spice merchant, or the local Taliban, you know, warlord. You don't know who he was.
Yeah.
So not only are...
Which, by the way, the Taliban are now our friend.
Well, I know. They're now our ally. But not only are British men going overseas to fight and die in these theaters, the exact people who were their enemies are now in London getting free housing, free healthcare, raising massive families, preaching different ideologies. And... Yeah, it's incredibly
essentially,
sad.
We now are allies with Al-Qaeda, essentially, if you really go down the degradation of the definition of who these people were, in Syria. And we are now allies with the Taliban in Afghanistan. So all those people who died, all those people who did all that was for what?
Seemingly for
that nothing. That would almost be like after World War II, we decided, okay, now we're going to become friends with the Nazis.
Yeah, bring the Nazis back. Let's be allies. Yeah, that's exactly
the same thing.
That's exactly what it was like
on
a smaller scale, albeit. But
I don't think there's anything wrong with becoming allies with Germany. I don't think there's anything wrong with becoming allies with Vietnam. I don't think there's anything wrong with becoming allies with Japan. But those are countries and nations. We're talking about movements.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
I agree.
What's happened in Syria and what's happened in Afghanistan is absolutely crazy when you consider how much treasure and blood was spilled, man.
Yeah, and nothing got any better. I mean, I went to Iraq 8 or 9 years ago just to see what it was like. The same reason I go anywhere. I was actually the judge of a kickboxing contest out there. Very, very wild. But that was at the time when ISIS were dragging people off the streets and, you know, parading them around on television. It was quite a scary time to go to Iraq. And, you know, speaking to the Iraqi people when I'm there, which is one of the reasons, like I said, I came to Russia this time, is their perspectives on it. They're like, well, you know, we didn't have ISIS beheading people, and we didn't have car bombs, and we didn't have this, and we didn't have that before the Americans came, and the British came, and the Europeans came. So were things better? Probably quality of life for the average person much better. So I'm not sure we're even doing anything positive with some of these wars. And I've always been, like Mr. Galloway, a very big anti-war guy. As far as I'm concerned, any politician who votes to go into a war, his son should go along with everyone else.
But we need wars. Our economy seems to be in such a place right now that it's the only thing we actually can thrive off of is selling arms and making arms so that we can use them somewhere. And we need to disperse them, so we have to have a war so that we can use those weapons up.
It's crazy, but
that's what we're doing in Ukraine.
It's certainly
$300 billion?
It's certainly a big moneymaker, but it doesn't actually benefit the average European citizen or the average American citizen.
Of course not.
So what it's down to the people of these countries to understand that although some people who own some weapon manufacturing plants in Germany, for example, will get insanely rich from, you know, giving all your
money
away.
And BlackRock, indeed,
that it doesn't actually help me. And I think that we're either in Europe in the time of massive political change, where in the next 2 or 3 years we're going to see things swing the opposite direction that they've been swinging for the last 20, or total societal collapse. Those are the two things that can possibly happen to Europe. And I speak about Europe all the time, by the way, because keep in mind, as much as I said, I am an American. I do love my country. A lot of the work Andrew and I do, trying to inspire young men to be better and do better, is because I'm not a politician, and this is my way of hoping that the next generation, you know, grows up a bit tougher than the one before. But I did primarily grow up in Europe. I moved out of the United States when I was 7.5 years old. So although I'm patriotically an American, I'm culturally a British person, I'm culturally European, which is why I can identify the problems there.
Can I tell you something I admire about you?
Tell me.
You don't have a fake British accent like most of them do.
No,
most of the people in the United States who came from the UK, from England, even if they came when they were 30 days old, have the thickest of accents that you will ever see anywhere. Yeah. And it always has seemed extremely fake to me, because I've seen British actors. I can't remember the name of the kid who just did that series, which was so good. My wife and I watched it every single night. About the killer, what was the famous Hitchcock movie?
Psycho?
Psycho, yeah. Psycho was turned into a series in the United States, and there's a young man who played it, and he's totally British. Like, they got him from England, brought him to the United States, did the whole movie with a perfect American accent. You could never even tell that he was British.
Well, Christian Bale as Batman does the same thing.
Right.
Christian Bale sounds English.
But, meanwhile, you got people in the United States, and they work at all these places like Fox News and everything, and you got, good evening, and I am, and you're going like, what in the hell? How fake is this?
Well, I sound slightly more British than my brother, but the real reason
you've got a little bit of it.
I was younger than him when we moved. He was 9, I was 7.5, so I lost a bit more of the Americanisms. But I do sound, Americans and British people both can't work out where I'm from.
So. Yeah, well, no, but my point is, if you're 50 years old and you've been in the United States since you were 1 year old, and your accent in the United States is thicker than most people in London, there's something phony going on here.
I agree.
And I get it, it's, you know, It's very impressive to have a British accent in the United States. It makes you different. It makes people want to like you and all this stuff, right?
I could do one if I wanted to, but I'm not going to change my life and walk around consciously trying to adapt an accent to try and make anyone think.
Well, Fox Business News is hiring, so if you want to put on the fake accent, I'm sure they'll pick you up.
They'll never give me a job in the official media.
Everything about official media is bullcrap, isn't it?
I run my own little media business. I give the message I give to the people I'm trying to talk to. I do it extremely well. I've mastered this art. I can get any message out to, you know, all the young men on earth if I wish. And everywhere I go in the world, from Uzbekistan to Russia to Hong Kong to the Bahamas, you know, overwhelmingly, young men come up to me and shake my hand and say, thank you, your advice changed my life. And that's why I do this.
80% of your audience is young males.
Absolutely.
You know, there was a time, Tristan, you may not remember this, but there was a time when having a job at CNN or working at NBC or working at the BBC, mm-hmm. or working at one of these institutions, really, it's a hell of a thing.
Yeah, very prestigious.
I mean, it's in my resume. I worked in all of them, and I was proud at the time to work there. I wouldn't, for all the money in the world, work in one of those places right now, because it would be completely selling out. You cannot work at one of those places without having to lie.
Well, the news no longer aims to inform people. I once heard that it was probably Walter Cronkite was the last, you know, the news presenter who actually just read the news. Yeah. I think that the news now
has to be... He's a smart man. I had dinner with him one night. He did more than read. He was the managing editor of the CBS Evening News, and he did dictate in many ways, as I do, this is the Sanchez effect. Mm-hmm. Guess who writes it?
You.
I do. Right. Guess who gets to pick guests?
Yeah.
Yeah. Guess who creates or decides what stories we're going to cover? I do. Right. So, it's not Russia. It's not RT. It's nothing. I do. I make those decisions. So and Walter Cronkite did that, too.
So you are not obligated to speak through a filter.
But I would be if I was working at CNN.
Well, we know that because recent developments in what we call mainstream news have proven that. I mean, just look at the variety of topics a man who I respect very much, like Tucker Carlson, will now talk about that he didn't talk about when he worked for Fox News or any other news network. So you see these people.
Tucker and I were laughing about that recently.
You see these people just move to X or the internet or where Andrew and I, you know, certainly grew and thrived and built our platform. And immediately it's like there's this filter, this strainer that's been taking off.
Isn't it great?
And they just, you know, have different guests, different perspectives.
But do you fear it'll be taken away? I do. I mean, the Googles of the world, whatever, they come in. Look, TikTok just got bought by Israel.
There has to be a pushback on this, you know, overwhelmingly massive revolution in not just free speech, but the freedom and the ability to get information out there. Who are Andrew and myself? We are two guys who started kickboxing when we were young, who grew up in a poor town, who started a business and made a little bit of money.
Did you break your nose?
Three times.
You could tell.
So,
sorry.
I'm not as good. Yeah, I got hit more than my brother did. But in fact, my brother broke it the first time, so he set me off on that chain of...
I grew up poor.
Yeah, we're just two nobodies from England's poorest town, and now we can command an opinion that no one has to subscribe to what I say. No one has to believe in what I say. But I can speak to millions, tens of millions, often hundreds of millions of young men and let them know my perspective on things. That's something that's never happened in human history. They used to control the printing press. Now they're going to try and find a way to control the media. And they very much, the internet. And they very much do. Andrew and I were blacklisted, banned on every single platform. We were taken down on everything.
Damn.
We were banned from banking. We were banned from Uber. We were banned from Airbnb. We were banned from everything.
That sucks. That's terrible.
Yeah. So
that's you know.
And the argument is that I still have free speech because I can go out and tell my mother or my friends what I think. It's like, well, the ability to amplify your speech,
but
I think,
still painful
goes hand in hand.
To go through something like that.
It wasn't easy, but I'm made of some pretty tough stuff. So.
Isn't that weird that we are now living in a time where I'll give you an example of how things have changed so much. There was a time where if you lived here, where we are right now, it's called the Russian Federation, but it used to be called the Soviet Union.
Yep.
You were not allowed to digest any information coming from the West. You weren't allowed to.
Yeah, the Iron Curtain.
You weren't allowed to do that, right? Today, if you live in the West, you're not allowed to digest any information coming from here.
Andrew and I did.
What does that tell you?
Andrew and I did a one-hour podcast on Rumble, and I encourage you to watch it if you ever get bored, about 4 years ago or 3 years ago, called The Iron Curtain. And it was us basically saying exactly this. We were reading out rules and regulations from the USSR days and the Soviet Union days and showing how they very much apply to the European Union as we
say.
The new Iron Curtain is, you know, all the way from Greece up to England, even though it's left all around France, all around Portugal. Yeah. The European Union is the new Iron Curtain as far as I'm concerned, because nobody goes as hard on this.
I always make the argument, if Xi, the guy who runs China, decides that he's going to give a speech, we should hear it. We should hear it.
Absolutely, we should.
Nobody in America even knows what this guy looks like.
Yes.
They're not allowed to hear him. They're not... Putin. You know, they make Putin out to be this crazy guy who has nothing to say. If you actually listen to Putin, you can still disagree with him, but he's a smart guy with a lot of important things to say.
People should
Why are we allowed to listen to these
people
guys?
People should be allowed to listen to people.
Of course.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I'd love to hear every speech Modi, given to...
You know?
Yeah, Modi.
Pereshkin.
Xi, the Ayatollahs.
Absolutely.
The Taliban, when they're our enemy. Let's let people speak and let's let people listen. That's the... I'm a free speech U.S. Constitution, like, fundamentalist, and that's my hill I die on. So I think anybody should be allowed to say anything.
And by golly, that's why we're glad you're here.
Yeah, well,
and
I'm glad to be
here. I'm glad we had an opportunity to have this conversation.
Yeah.
I hope that things go well. We're all God's children, and we make mistakes, and whatever happens, happens. And it's great that it seems like you guys were charged with something which didn't seem to be fairly prosecuted. It seems to be the obvious case at this
point. It wasn't fairly investigated. It wasn't fairly prosecuted. Yeah. It wasn't fairly handled with. People need to understand
that. And that really sucks.
The Romanian justice system actually moves very quick. If the police raid your house and find a kilogram of heroin in your house, you will be brought, you'll be charged, indicted, brought to trial and convicted within a matter of weeks, and you'll be serving a 10-year sentence. The fact that the Romanians have been swinging at me for 4 long years and have never presented a document that a judge has deemed fit for trial should tell people all they need to know.
Yeah. And
I'm many things, but I'm not a criminal.
But you're good. I mean, as long as you don't go back to Romania or maybe an EU country, you should be fine.
I do go back to Romania.
You do?
I will not let them. I like Romania. I like my house. My daughters speak Romanian. They're half Romanian themselves.
So
I will not be chased away by corruption, corrupt prosecutors, bad actors. I will not be chased away by lies. I will go back there when I want. And if they choose to arrest me again, I'll prove my innocence again.
Sounds virtuous.
I am not going to run away and hide in any country in the world. That's... And when the Romanians want to talk to me again, maybe they want to charge me for speech violations next week, and they call my lawyer, I'll fly into Romania and I'll walk and look them in the eyes and I'll listen to them.
That's impressive to be able to say something like that. You're standing your ground. You know where you stand. You know that you're innocent. And if you want to bring it on.
Exactly.
And that's what you're saying. Wow. Tristan Tate.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, my friend. Really a good conversation. And that's it for us, having conversations with people from the West. Maybe we should call the show that. Conversations with People from the West. We'll stay with the Sanchez Effect. I want to thank you for allowing this conversation to come into your domain. I want to thank you also for joining us in all these social media places where we're being seen right now, whether it's on BitChute, which is very different, or whether you're seeing us and watching us or listening to us or taking us for a jog on Spotify. We're glad you're there. Obviously, we're back on YouTube in a big way, surprisingly, and we have nothing to do with it. And X as well, where it's millions and millions and millions and impressive. Thanks again. Thanks for letting me into your home. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.